This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. It's hardly necessary to have committed crimes in order to write a compelling crime novel, but Eddie Little's new crime novel is based on firsthand experience. The 42-year-old writer has spent years in prison. He was a criminal for a lot longer than he's been a professional writer. He supported himself mostly through robbery since he quit school in the seventh grade. He soon needed plenty of money to feed his heroin addiction. Now he claims to have given up crime to be free from drugs and free from his own self-destructive behavior. He does volunteer work with drug addicts and ex-cons through a group called We Care. He writes the Outlaw L.A. column for the L.A. Weekly, and he has a new novel based on his own experiences. It's called Another Day in Paradise. A movie adaptation is in production, directed by Larry Clark, who made Kids, and starring James Woods and Melanie Griffith. Here's a reading from the opening of the novel. Some listeners may find this passage offensive or too violent.
Most people think you open a safe with high-tech instruments and incredible skill. I once thought the same thing. That was a long time ago. I was still young and pretty. Now Mel was huge, a human wrecking machine. Even at 14, I knew that refrigerators with feet came a dime a dozen. What I liked was that this huge, dangerous person liked me. But more important, what was crucial, Mel knew things. Not what they taught in school, practical things. How to crack a safe, the best way to set up bogus checking accounts. When to force a door with a pry bar, and when you could use it Lloyd to slip the lock. The fine art of cutting through walls and ceilings. How you could slip into the crawl space beneath the building and tear through the floor to gain entry. Just as important was his advice on day-to-day life, like never, ever buy your drugs from niggas. Always call cops, sir. When you can't avoid a fight, use a weapon. Your first choice being a gun. If you're not packed, you grab whatever is handy, and if there's nothing to pick up, no bottles to break, no bricks or rocks to use, what you do is you stick your index finger in their eye. You ram it through, turn the eye into pulp, shove your finger all the way into their brain. Guaranteed, they'll leave you alone. The world, according to Mel, wasn't exactly a Boy Scout manual, but it was absolutely the guidance I needed. Before Mel, I was shooting speed, eating pills, occasionally slamming stuff, surviving by robbing vending machines, petty burglaries, stealing stereos out of cars, and boosting. This generated a couple, $300 a day, well over $1,000 a week. But wanting more was part of me, just like the whiteness of my skin, something I was born with and couldn't change even if I wanted to. The American dream in person, hustling, stealing to steal, blowing the cash as fast as I could get it. Shooting speed till my nose bled, till my eyes crossed, ether fumes rolling out of my lungs like clouds of toxic waste. Staying awake for days on end, amphetamine psychosis in full bloom. Giving money away, giving drugs away, and always stealing so I'd have more for me and more for the borderline crazies, bust-out junkies, psychotic, scooter trash, ex-convict, Vietnam vet, kill 'em all, let God sort them out. Fools and dope fiends I ran with, looked up to and loved like a normal person, supposedly loves his brothers. A riotous 14-year-old dope fiend Robin Hood. That was how I saw myself.
That's Eddie Little reading from his new novel, Another Day in Paradise. Before we talk about how you became a writer, just give us a sense of what your crime resume is. What are some of the crimes you've pulled off in your career?
That I've been convicted of?
Mm-hmm.
Go back to when I was 10 years old. I got picked up for use of inhalants, which is sniffing glue, and after that, strong arm robbery, burglary, arm robbery. The list goes on.
How much time did you say you spent in prison during your life?
more than I wanted to.
Years?
Yeah.
Now, the character in your book has a mentor named Mel, and Mel teaches him the ropes when it comes to burglary, self-defense, dealing with the cops. Did you have a mentor like Mel who taught you how to get along in the world of crime?
Mel was... The character is based on a guy very similar to Mel in the book, you know? Very similar guy.
How did you meet him?
Very similar situation to what you read in the book.
Well, in the book, what happens, the character has just stolen money from a vending machine. A security guard catches him. They start fighting. The main character's very roughed up. He's in pain. And that's when he meets Mel. And Mel kind of takes him under his wing, gives him heroin to dull the pain, but also creates a heroin addict out of him. And, you know, he becomes Mel's number two, you know, on the crime jobs that he does. Is that how it happened with you?
Yeah, verbatim. The reality was Mel, you know, was an ex-military guy. He did get thrown out of the military for abusing drugs and so on. I was involved in a crime where I got really badly beaten, really badly. And the cat got me through that period. I'd been using heroin before, but when you're that beat up, you need morphine, you need something, and what was available was heroin. It was maybe the last of the old Jewish outlaw dudes. And he was, you know, he was into it. And him and his old lady basically adopted me and the chick I was going out with at the time. And it was a very interesting period of my life.
Once you got addicted to heroin with the help of your mentor, did that make it easier for him to control you? Because you needed to constantly get more money, whether you wanted to or not. You needed a supplier for drugs.
It's a dual thing. One, before I hooked up with him, I was shooting. I was shooting speed for, you know, the book doesn't exaggerate, days on end. You know what I mean? Like shooting methamphetamine until I was seeing stuff that wasn't there, talking to people that weren't there. I was out of my damn mind. And stealing with both hands. You know, start in the morning, stop at night. If it wasn't nailed down, I was stealing it. And... continuing that particular lifestyle, I had a really short life expectancy. Heroin, and I'm not a, you know, I mean, heroin like has literally killed me. I mean, it stopped my heart, you know, all that, but you know, it's a nightmare. But one thing it does is it does not make you stark raving insane. It allows you to function. And so, in that sense, I was already hooked on drugs. You know, whether it was speed, whether it was heroin, whether it was whatever, that was not going to change until I was so burnt out that I was ready to stop. So it was not like the cat turned me on to heroin specifically to get me hooked so that I'd be an active crime partner. It was just part of the whole lifestyle.
It would seem to me that in some ways addicts wouldn't make very professional criminals because you're desperate when you're an addict. You need money. You need it right then. And in a way, it doesn't matter whether it's a lot or just enough for your next fix. You have to take whatever risk is necessary to get that money for your next fix. And it probably makes you really sloppy.
That's... true. When you're hooked, you're going to do absolutely whatever you have got to do to get the drugs. You know, there is no morality. There is no savoir-faire to it. You know, you're hooked. What took place with me and what takes place with most functioning addicts, and that's whether you're, you know, some little trendy movie star guy or you're a dope fiend who's got a 9-to-5 job at the Chevrolet plant, or whether you're a thief. What takes place is you go through a period of time. Speaking strictly for myself, I won't generalize. Where I was on top of the whole deal. My thinking processes were clear. I was able to plan in advance. I was able to execute the things I had to do and stay ahead of the game. And what happens with me and everyone I've ever met is you start deteriorating. You become sloppier. Your thinking becomes less linear and more fragmented. Your desperation level increases as your habit increases. And eventually you end up either getting stopped because you get arrested, or because if you're a regular person trying to keep a habit going, you get fired from your job, or you overdose and you die, or, you know, for the few fortunate people that manage to do it, you get clean. But it's a gradual process. You don't start out using a complete wreck, you know. You got to work to get there. You with me?
Yeah. Well, you said, you know, when you're addicted to heroin, there's no morality. You know, you just do whatever you have to in order to get what you need. I mean, and if you're not addicted to heroin and you're a professional thief, is there morality there?
I have no idea.
You've never been in that position. Is that what you're saying?
Well, that and there's myths. There's that our society propagates and that we propagate ourselves to continue, you know, the stand-up guy,
the criminal with a code.
The criminal with a code, the guy who'll never screw his friends, goes on and on and on. Well, I mean, reality is everything I've ever heard about, you steal a few million dollars and all of a sudden best friends start killing each other. You know what I mean? So, you know, maybe that exists, just I've never seen it. I've read about it and I've seen it in movies. But as far as real life goes, you know, it's an incredibly competitive, vicious lifestyle.
My guest is Eddie Little, an ex-con and ex-junkie turned writer. His debut novel is called Another Day in Paradise. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Eddie Little, an ex-con and ex-junkie turned writer. His debut novel is called Another Day in Paradise. What are some of the most important things you learned from your mentor, the guy who the character Mel is based on in your new novel?
The most important thing, I think, anyone can do is learn how to think. And until, you know, eventually drugs took their toll and the guy it's based on did start falling apart. He was a very bright, sharp, analytical cat. And we would have, like, these long conversations, you know, just stoned out of our minds. And I learned how to think. I learned how to actually use my brain as opposed to just going to school and learning stuff by rote. You know, I only went to the 7th grade. That's it. As far as I went. And as a 14, 15-year-old idiot, which is what I was, having, like, these things not just brought to my attention, but brought out of my mind, like, by a process of discussion where I came up with the answers, thought it out, and realized that what I was saying was true instead of having it preached at me. I think that's the greatest thing. You know, I mean, teach a guy how to shortwire an alarm or cut through a roof, or, you know, in the regular world, maybe work a computer. You know, that's a trade. It's craft. It's skill. It's, no, you know, it's like a nice thing. But learn how to think is heavy, and that's what the dude did.
How did, I don't know his name, that's why I keep calling him your mentor, but...
In the book, he's Mel. He's dead in real life. I think just stick with Mel.
Well, how did he die in real life?
Very unpleasantly.
During a robbery? What are you laughing at?
Is that a trick question?
No.
He died real unpleasantly. He was not a happy guy. And as far as going into details, I'm not going to do it. The book's fiction. Read the book. It's...
I guess there's things that you really can't talk about when...
There are absolutely things I cannot talk about.
When a lot of your life has been conducted illegally, it's not, I guess, all
there
stuff you
no
can talk about on
of
fresh
limitations.
Air. Right. Okay. How old were you when you left home?
12.
And why'd you leave?
I wanted to expand my life.
Well, I'm not sure what that means.
I was not real happy with my home situation, and I felt that I could probably do better elsewhere.
When you started stealing, how did you rationalize it? I mean, how did you justify it to yourself that you were taking other people's stuff and sometimes, when necessary, hurting other people?
When you were a little teeny child, did you ever steal a piece of candy, a piece of gum?
But actually, yes, I have.
I think most of us have. Okay. The jump from a piece of candy or a piece of gum to a stereo, to a car, to a sack full of money is not much of a jump. It's the same act. And regardless, with a piece of gum, sack full of money, it's all wrong. There's no cleanup for it. I think that as a youth, or maybe for most kids, period, if you do not have a strong moral framework or spiritual framework, if you will, there really is no differentiation between snatching that piece of candy or that piece of gum and then accelerating into maybe stealing a new pair of pants. Or I've heard rumors that oftentimes teenage girls will shoplift an article of clothing or some perfume. For guys, it's other stuff. But it's a logical progression unless there is something to change your mind.
Would you ever have any direct encounters with the people you were stealing from?
Not if I could avoid it.
I guess what I'm wondering is, did you feel like you ever had any empathy for the people whose stuff you were taking? Or, how do you turn that off? Or maybe some people never have it in the first place.
Okay, going back to the whole code thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
What I did was, there's no cleanup for any of it, right? You break the law, you hurt people, you pay the price. But, for instance, I never snatched purses. I never broke in somebody's pad and ran off with their television set. The crimes I committed were like commercial burglaries, things of that nature. Consequently, the identification of having damaged a person did not take place until I was significantly older and became aware that we have a society. And as a member of that society, if I cause damage, even if it is to a ridiculously rich chain of banks, I'm damaging the society. Consequently, I'm damaging everyone involved in it and damaging myself and those I care about. As a youth and as a young man, those concepts were entirely alien to me. Does that track? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. When you would, you know, rob, I don't know, a store or a bank or whatever it was you robbed, if you got a lot of money, what would you do with it? I mean, did you have, like, legit bank accounts? Or did you have to, you know, hide the money or carry the money?
Money went on drugs and fast living.
There wasn't much to save or anything?
No, I mean, you know, you're spending $500 a day, and you got a nice hotel room, and you got expensive tastes. It's gone. You know, you get to the other end of the spectrum, and you're all the way broke and dying and just scuffling to live, you're broke. So regardless, you're broke.
Eddie Little's debut novel is called Another Day in Paradise. He'll be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Eddie Little. He's an ex-con and former junkie who says he's given up crime, drugs, and other self-destructive behavior. He's now a writer. He writes the Outlaw LA column for the LA Weekly, and his first novel has just been published. It's a crime novel called Another Day in Paradise. In your novel, the main character discovers bookstores while he's on the road doing robberies, and he starts buying books about philosophy, including books by Sartre and Nietzsche. How did you start reading?
I have always been a compulsive reader. When I was, I don't know, 10, I really discovered reading. And it was my first major love, the first big escape, if you will, the first time that my mind actually worked above and beyond looking at whatever idiocy was currently on the television set. I started reading and the world opened up to me. It became a lot more than what I'd ever dreamed of. And I read voraciously, right up to this day. Consequently, I have no education, I have acquired a whole lot of knowledge.
The interesting thing for me, I think, about your having read so much is that reading is in so many ways about empathy. It's about identifying with a character who isn't you and really feeling for them and allowing yourself to see completely through the eyes of somebody else. And yet your work required that you not have any empathy for people because you were stealing things from them. Just an irony I thought I'd point out.
It's an irony I have often contemplated. You know, it's like a contradiction in terms. It is. And there's no easy explanation. You can, you know, fact is, there's no easy explanation and there is no excuse. My reality was I was hooked. My reality was I had to eat. My reality was I was a kid. My reality was that if you go into, and this still is an effect, you go into foster homes, and you go into the child welfare institutions and bureaucracy, your life is not, you know, I mean, miracle may happen. You may hook up with some wonderful people. But most of the time, it is an ongoing nightmare. And for a kid that's in that situation, there are very few options. You know, if this was a utopian society, great, but the fact is, it's not. And the fact is that if you're a kid that's getting abused at home, and if you're a kid that has no rich relatives to take you in. And if you're a kid whose best option is to hit the street, you've got few options. You're either going to turn tricks, you're going to steal, or you're going to die.
My guest is Eddie Little. His new novel is called Another Day in Paradise. And like the character in the new novel, Eddie Little spent a lot of his life as a burglar and criminal, been in and out of prison, had a drug habit. This is his first book. In the acknowledgments to your new novel, you thank the writer Jerry Stahl, and you say he is to writing what Mel, the mentor in the new novel, was to crime.
Absolutely.
Now, Jerry Stahl used to write for TV shows ranging from Moonlighting to ALF, and while he was writing for those shows, he had a heroin habit. And he wrote a terrific memoir about those years called Permanent Midnight, which he talked about after it was published on our show. How did you meet him, and how did he help you?
Me and Jerry have very similar bad habits. And oftentimes when you're involved in that particular underground, your paths cross. The bad habit underground. And we were hanging out and getting loaded and doing this, doing that. And he checked out some of my stuff. And he dug it. And I was like, man, this is good. You should do something with this, brother. You can get, I think you can get a deal. I think people would like to read this. And my response was, nah, I didn't go for it. Anyway, our friendship continued. And eventually, through Jerry, I got my nerve up to actually submit this, like this first chapter, actually, with this guy named Trevor Miller, who runs a magazine called Men's Perspective, and he's a writer himself and so on. And he dug it. And it was like, he really, really liked it. And they published a little chunk of this in Men's Perspective, and I went on to put the book together, got the deal with Viking Penguin, and they're currently making a movie out of it. And that's like the evolution of this particular book.
We'd been talking a bit about empathy during the interview, and how you can't have any if you're a professional burglar or a thief. You now work with a group called We Care, which helps people who are housebound by AIDS or, by age. And this kind of work is really like an exercise in empathy. Do you feel like you're using different muscles than you've ever used before by doing this kind of work, helping other people?
It's like a trick question. I have always... How do I explain this? I've always, even at my worst, I would want to, help other people, be a service. There's a line in the book, I perceive myself as like a little dope fiend Robin Hood.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really true. That's the way I perceive myself as a kid. Okay, now we're coming a lot of years later. And the whole Robin Hood concept is invalid, right? Like maybe in jolly old England, there was like some guy who stole from the rich and gave it to the poor and was really a nice guy. But I don't believe it. You steal, you screw people over, you get a certain karmic balance. It's bad. It is not good. But as a kid, I didn't see life that way. I have the opportunity, and that's what it is, man. It's an opportunity. I got the opportunity now to actually help other human beings who need that help without looking for nothing in return. And see, that is a gift. It's a gift to me.
Do you ever go into the home of somebody who's sick or who's very old and they know something about you and they think, well, wait a minute, I don't want this guy in my house. Maybe he's not really thoroughly reformed. Maybe he'll take something. Maybe I can't trust him.
Hell no. I have...
I keep getting funnier and funnier.
Yeah. Okay, A, right? A, regardless of what my past is,
mm-hmm.
I bust my ass whatever I'm doing. That's A. B, if I'm going into somebody's home and they need help, they are not going to turn down the help because I have a past that is less than perfect. Man, when I do something, when people like me do something, I tend to be as effective as possible. You know, if there's a multiplicity of things that I am involved in, I mean, aside from, you know, people that are sick, people that are old and so on, we could also work with gangbangers on a regular basis, with ex-cons on a regular basis, with junkies, active and otherwise, on a regular basis. And if I'm dealing with a sick person, like someone that needs, say they're just out of food, you know, it's like I'm covered with tattoos. Well, I don't go in flying a tank top and looking scary. I go in wearing long sleeves and talking to them the way I'm talking to you and being pleasant as I can. And I do what is needed and I get the hell out. You know, I don't say, can I use your bathroom and go through their medicine cabinet. I don't poke around in their kitchen. I don't, you know what I mean? I get in, I do what I'm supposed to, I get out. See ya. If I'm talking to gangbangers, or if I'm talking to a junkie, or if I'm talking to a convict or an ex-convict, the words that I say have an amount of validity that will not be obtained talking to anyone other than someone like myself who has been through all the... I'm doing my best not to swear. Who has been through all the ups and downs and pitfalls and ins and outs of that lifestyle.
Eddie Little. His debut novel is called Another Day in Paradise.